I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten, and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
My work around anxiety with anybody of any age is there some messaging behind this? Is it telling you something? Because, you know, we can be very quick to, especially today, to jump to like, oh, this is an uncomfortable feeling. I will medicate this away and I will be fine. When in fact, that uncomfortable feeling might be a really important signal from our body to our brain saying, hey, not digging this, would like to try something else. What do you think?
You're listening to Make Some Noise Podcast, episode number 597 with guest Dr. John Duffy. Welcome to Make Some Noise Podcast, your guide for strategies, tools, and insight to empower yourself. I'm your host, Andrea Owen, global speaker, entrepreneur, life coach since 2007, and author of 3 books that have been translated into 18 languages and are available in 22 countries. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a lesson that will help you maximize unshakable confidence, master resilience, and make some noise in your life. You ready? Let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am so glad you're here. Hey, Write Your Way Through It is open. We start tomorrow if you're listening to this in real time. And even if you're not, if it's just a couple weeks out, you can still join us. I've created this program, this coaching program, so you can come in late. You won't have missed anything except a little bit of time, and the price has been lowered at this point if it is later. So AndreaOwen.com/program. This is a place for you to shift your life. Honestly, I'm just going to say it. I have had some profound moments in my life through journaling, whether I was going through a really difficult, tumultuous time, like a big breakup or death of a parent, or just everyday life. So this program gives you the opportunity to have the creative time for some critical thinking about your life, to just let out what needs to be let out, plus community with other women, laser coaching from me. I mean, it's a win-win. Write Your Way Through It. It's over at AndreaOwen.com/program to get yourself signed up. And we have a repeat guest today. I have been a colleague of Dr. John Duffy's now for several years. I greatly admire his work. He does a lot of things around parenting, which I know a decent amount of you are, but I also know a decent amount of you that aren't. However, I think that it can be helpful because we are talking about differences that he sees in young men versus young women in terms of his clients. So you'll see some, you might see, be able to have some self-reflection around that. As well as, you know, this is a podcast episode about our boys and young men. And I think it's safe to say that all of you listening have a boy or young man or man in your life that you care about. And I think it can be really helpful to get some insight there from some experts. So that's why I really wanted to have him on again. So for those of you that aren't familiar with his work, let me tell you a little bit about him before we jump in. Dr. John Duffy is a Chicago-based clinical psychologist, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and national media expert. He has been in vigorous private practice for 25 years, specializing in work with adolescents, young adults, and their parents. Dr. Duffy has written and contributed to articles from See It for CNN, The Washington Post, New York Times, Your Teen, and countless other media outlets. On TV, he has been a regular contributing expert on News Nation and Steve Harvey, and has shared his expertise through frequent appearances on CNN, The Today Show, The Morning Blend, and hundreds and hundreds of appearances on local outlets. So without further ado, here is Dr. John Duffy. John, thank you so much for coming back. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, I follow you on Instagram, and I have since I had you on the show last time, which we'll drop that link in the show notes, where we dedicated, I think, much of the conversation to anxiety. And I know my people, those are some of my highest listened to episodes, actually, are on anxiety.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah. And so we'll drop that in the show notes because it's been a few years, but you had a book that just came out, and I saw one of your posts on Instagram because I follow you there. And I was like, I need to have him back on because, you know, about half of my listeners are parents, half of them are not parents. And those of you that are child-free, please stick around because we're going to talk about some anxiety for non-teens. So stick around. But I know, you know, off the heels of this pandemic, which isn't technically over, right. I know that it's been rough on kids and teenagers. And I definitely want to dive into that. But I want to start, I have a question for you because this was so interesting in the beginning of your book. And I think I was right. I think I was looking in your most recent book. Maybe I wasn't. But the new book is Rescuing Our Sons, 8 Solutions to Our Crisis of Disaffected Teen Boys. And you talk in the very beginning of the book about the difference you see as a therapist in young women clients versus young men. So can we start there? Because I think people will resonate with this even as adults.
I've noticed in the last few years, and especially post-pandemic, Andrea, that a therapy session with a young woman or a teenage girl is a work of art. It is a completed work of art in that I work with young girls who will come in. They will state the issue that they want to talk about. We will go through the totality of an emotional process in an hour. And they will navigate the hour. They will tell me, okay, I have one more thing to say. There's at least one, but two young women I work with who will say, well, we only have a couple of minutes left. So, I'll let you know when time's up and then we got to go, So literally, and there's this, there've been a few things that have happened that have been really cool in the last few years. One is, with the whole Me Too movement, you feel this hope that I didn't see in girls and young women 5-6 years ago, where there's like some glass ceilings breaking and maybe just cracking, but it's enough to give them hope, even though they're going through all the things. They're going through, you know, depression, anxiety, and self-esteem issues, and body image issues, and all the things that everybody else is going through. But there is this ray of hope, and what they also have in their corner is this emotional language. So they are quick to understand what they're feeling, what the people around them are feeling, and this connection to other people that's pretty organic and comes pretty naturally to them. Mm-hmm. Unlike the young men that I'm working with, where if I'm working with a young man, that hour is hard. Oftentimes, he is in this room under duress, not sure why he's here, not sure that being here is part of that definition of masculinity. Like, is this a man's thing to do? Still, even today, is this a man's thing to do? Is therapy a sign of weakness somehow? And then those things that women naturally carry, that emotional language, young men do not carry that in the same way that young women do. They have a difficult time labeling their emotions. They're feeling something, but getting there is really, really difficult. Understanding the emotions of other people, even harder. And then there is this whole self-worth thing. They want to be supportive of the changes that are happening in favor of young women, but there is this fear, am I going to be labeled as toxic? Am I going to be labeled as uncool if I'm on the side of my female counterparts? There's a whole bunch of identity questions that are asking themselves about, like, culturally, where do I fit in Do I fit in anywhere? And finally, a lot of these guys are looking at their dads and the men in their lives and thinking, I don't want that life. That doesn't look like a happy life. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the girls and young women I work with will look at their mothers and women generation in front of them and think, these women are reinventing themselves. They're trying something new. They're divorced and dating, or they've got a life of their own. Whatever it is, there's this hope that the future looks bright. Whereas the boys, the lights are slowly going out. And so they revert to things like smoking weed and sitting in basements and regressing to a much younger age, playing video games, you know what I mean? Like ad nauseum, like for hours a day.
Do you think that's interesting? And do you think that, like, how much do we know that that is part of brain differences, or it's more cultural and social conditioning? Like, is it like even Steven? Like, can you talk about that for a little bit?
It's kind of a clash of all of that, mm-hmm. because there are definitely brain differences. There is no argument. There is ample research that would suggest the female brain develops a few years more quickly than the male brain, cognitively, intellectually, probably more than a few years emotionally. So women are way ahead. That hasn't been kind of a terminal issue in the past, right? You know, in other words, in classrooms and in other settings, we've been able to adapt to that in a systemic way. Post-pandemic, I feel like we're failing that, because in a lot of ways, I think boys and young men have fallen further behind. They're not catching up socially and emotionally as much as we would like them to. And school systems and workplaces are not adapting very well to those changes. So I think part of it's cultural, mm-hmm. and part of it is just, you know, where we are genetically. I think the latter can be mitigated by the former if we're on top of it and we intervene early enough in the lives of kids.
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting. You know, I have a 16-year-old son, and I think the conclusion that I have come to is, and this is with both of my children, like you can raise them and try to give them the best values that you can and teach them life lessons and like repeat the really important ones that you want to, but you cannot compete with the media that they are going to consume.
No.
And the friends that they're going to have that tell them things and model things. And it feels like a battle sometimes.
100%. And you're so right. You cannot compete with it. And I think as parents, a lot of times we want to. The best we can do, and it's pretty good, is get our voice in the mix, right? We know that like the social media that's available to kids now, and it's ever evolving, right? You know, last time you and I talked, we were probably talking about Instagram being, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. the yeah. hot thing. Now, you know, with TikTok available. And I don't know how deep down the rabbit hole you've gotten.
Oh, I'm deep in the TikTok. Rabbit hole with oh, yeah. the micro okay. so, niches there. I like it.
Oh, it's I actually really love it. And I like the way young people use TikTok a lot of the time. If we looked up hashtag anxiety on TikTok, we would find some young person helping other young people. Like, if you suffer from this, this, and this, do this, this, and this. Like, you know, and I think those are the fact that kids and young adults are willing to play like de facto therapists for one another really effectively is awesome. If you watch 1,000 of those videos, you will lead with, oh my God, I'm an anxious person or I'm a depressed person. You know, like I think just by virtue of the fact that you're exposing yourself to that material over and over again, that's where the problem comes in. Yeah. Not in the material itself, but most of the material is young people trying to help young people or entertain young people. And I'm with you. I think net, it's a gain. It's a good mm-hmm. thing. And I think we're probably in the minority there.
Yeah. Especially as middle-aged adults.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. Thank you for talking about that. And I want to next ask you, and I think you've touched on it when I asked you the first question about the difference that you see in your therapy practice, but you know, the subtitle of your latest book is called A Crisis of Disaffected Boys, which I know as an author, the publisher wants to have a dramatic subtitle like it sells books.
Yes.
Like, let's be honest for a second. But can you speak to that? Like, what is this crisis of disaffected boys?
Yeah. So I've noticed more and more in the past, I mean, I'm going to say like, you know, 7 or 8, maybe 10 years, that boys report to me overtly that they are sad, that they are lonely, that they feel disconnected from other people. And that all funnels down into this kind of raw sense of hopelessness. And what they turn to is kind of one-dimensional non-connection. The easiest example is pornography, mm-hmm. where it's kind of like, you know, young men consume an ungodly amount of porn in mm-hmm. any given day. And it gives them such a distorted view of women and relationships and power differential and violence and connection and relationship.
Intimacy. Like, that's a big intimacy. Range.
Yes, yes. Things. Everything that's important in life is kind of depicted in there in this distorted way. And it really messes with their sense of connection and identity. It really is an indelible part of what they take in. And something you said earlier is true. The media we consume, mm-hmm. one thing that young men consume more of, I think, than young women in my experience, is kind of very, very alpha male material. Podcasts, Barstool Sports, stuff that shows up in video games, certain YouTube videos, where you get this really divisive, vitriolic messaging. And 99% of this stuff is really entertaining for guys, really fun, really interesting. And then every once in a while, you get this subversive message that says like, hey guys, maybe girls and women are taking something from us that's ours. You know, like maybe we should fight the fight instead of going along to get along. And I see that boys are gradually internalizing these messages and, you know, kind of politically shifting one way or another. I'm going to try to be as apolitical as I can, but certainly being affected by these voices. So we were talking about how as parents, we cannot counter these voices. We cannot like just say, yeah. Don't listen
you
to that.
To completely shut the internet down. And then you're not taking into account what they're going to hear at school. Yeah.
Exactly. So the best we can do is get our voices in the mix and at least say, you know, what are you listening to? Let me listen to an hour of that with you. You know what I mean? Like if your kid's listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, for example, well, that goes on for 4 hours and that can be super entertaining. So listen to that for a while, get a feel for what he's taking in. If there's a counterpoint you're inclined to present that counterpoint. And he may say, okay, I get it. And he may completely disagree with you, but at least he'll recognize, oh, I need to be discerning in what I take in, right? I need to give it a little thought instead of just like taking it in and swallowing it wholesale. And that to me is like really important. It's an important role of parenting that I think we don't really pay a lot of attention to these days.
Well, I am proud to say that that's what I do, especially to my son who consumes a lot of YouTube videos and, you know, and he's a gamer and I know how the algorithm works and I know it can be a slippery slope. Whenever he tells me, and I've always been open to hearing about whatever it is that he's, you know, the newest YouTuber that he's had on repeat over and over that he's subscribed to. And what I have done from a pretty young age with him is even when I agree with whoever it is that he's, you know, listening to, is I ask and I'm like, tell me about the source. Where do they get their information? And it's really hard for me to do that when he's listening to someone that I like, you know?
Yeah, right.
I'm like, yeah, you should definitely listen to that. But even when the 2016 election was, you know, it went the way that it was, the way that it didn't. He was only 9 at the time. And, you know, I was voting for Hillary Clinton and he knew that. Like, and I noticed that he was very much on board with that. I told him why people might vote for Donald Trump because
wow.
I wanted him to know the other, like, I want him to see the other side and be able to like be open-minded to people and have these conversations. And then when I explained it to him, he said, like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, really fine. So even today, yeah, he comes to me with different YouTubers, and I can get a little overboard sometimes, and it's a bit of an interrogation, and I can tell he gets kind of defensive. But now he's 16, and I explained to him, like, I want you to make sure you are looking into the source. If you are listening to an hour-long video, I don't care that he's a comedian. Like, he has his opinions, and you are buying into it, and you're only 16. And so I want you to always question the source. So that is something that I've done that I think I did a pretty good job of. But I'll tell you, it's hard when it's someone that I agree with.
Oh, I get it. I never really thought about that part, right? You know, like that idea that, like, oh yeah, we need to teach our kids to be questioning all the authority, including the authority that we are 100% behind. We can't pick and choose. Mm-hmm. And to your credit, when I work with young guys your son's age, they will tell me, we need to learn. You guys are teaching from an outdated model where you're teaching us, you know, history and math, and maybe we need to know all that, but we can also find an awful lot of it online. Mm-hmm. But discernment is something we're not that good at. And yeah, we need to learn that, because we can learn 8 different things from 8 different sources and draw 8 different conclusions, and mm-hmm. we're lost as to what to believe and what to think. So the idea that you're saying, listen to all the viewpoints, you know, that is mighty parenting. I think that's really, really hard to do, especially if you're like, oh, this is the Hillary Clinton podcast. And
right,
I'm saying,
it's Gloria Steinem. Like,
yes, right.
Question your source. Yeah.
Exactly. No, well, that's so good. Just, that's so powerful.
It opens a conversation. And I what's interesting now is that he's excited to turn 18 and be able to vote, but he doesn't want to register with like one party because he doesn't know where he stands. And I think that's great. And I'm like, all I care about is that you understand what's important to you and like what are your values on each different policy and each different topic, because it can put you like not labeled maybe in one particular political party. So yeah, he's become pretty fun to talk to in that regard. We need to take a quick ad break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about sort of like the ultimate wisdom from teenagers. So we'll be right back.
There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then Songfinch, musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise. I have this question and I wrote it down because I'm like, this is a big question and I don't know if I'm going to explain it right. So when people think about their own lives when they were a teenager, so it's like you and I are thinking about, you know, when we were teens, and we know that at times it's led to some behaviors that we now don't like about ourselves, like that happened to us when we were teenagers. Maybe it was like with our own parents or our friends or whatever.
Sure.
Where, you know, and we're adults now, if this were your therapy client, like where would you start with them? Like, are there certain questions? I'm thinking about my audience who maybe, you know, is realizing some things about their quote unquote inner teen. Like, where would someone start to sort of like unpack that?
I always start with, I think we make assumptions sometimes based on what people look like or what we're hearing from somebody else about them. And, you know, my goal in the initial hour of therapy, what I used to do, Andrea, is I would get a clipboard out and I'd have my little coat and tie on and I'd be, you know, and I would ask a series of packed questions about symptoms and diagnostic stuff. And, you know, and I realized, oh, I'm so losing this person sitting across from me. And I found like in my personal life, I was doing some of that as well.
Oh, you know, because like, very because clinical.
I'm very much the expert. And, you know, like, you know, you're very much the patient. And it's like that model is not very effective in relating. I try to treat clients like human beings and ask them like, so I skip all the clipboard and I just ask them like, all right, so I know we're in here for a reason, but what are you about? Like, what's your deal? What do you listen to? Like, you get to go to a concert tonight. Who are you going to go see? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the last thing you read that you thought was awful? Like, I love questions like that, where it's like, I want to get to know who you are, what you're about, what your thing is. And I usually ask, what are you secretly really good at? Because usually there's an answer to that, that people are like really reluctant to share. Like, you know, well, I can carry a damn good tune. I'm actually a pretty good mathematician, like stuff you wouldn't expect.
I can pick up a song just by hearing the bass line.
Wow, that's, there you go.
I can tell you what song it is. Yeah, not every time. I'm not, you know, I'm not batting 1,000 there, but a lot of times I will just hear a bass line and I will tell you what song it
that's
is.
That's pretty damn
that's
good.
That's my weird thing.
Okay, so I would want to know that about you because that would tell me something, right? That would tell me you're into music enough that you have, and you've got a pretty deep repertoire. You know a lot of it, right?
Tiger
West. Yeah. So I would ask more about music because clearly that matters to you, you know, and sometimes just through that, we can get to an idea of what you are about, like what bands you're drawn to, what would you never listen to? You know, like questions like that for an hour. First of all, most of us never protect an hour ever to talk about ourselves that way. So just the luxury of doing that is a little gift to yourself. And you realize things about yourself like, oh yeah, I am about that. That is a pretty cool thing about me. I sometimes think about myself in this deficit way. And I think in this Western culture, we do this. We think about like what we're missing. Like, you know, I'm 10 pounds too heavy and I don't like the way I look. And I'm not that bright. I'm not bringing anything special to the world. I don't know if I'm a good draw to a good partner. You know, we think these terrible thoughts about each other that we would never think about most anybody else. And if we can get ourselves thinking differently, and that's what I try to elicit. And I think that's what a lot of therapists try to elicit is like, you know, first lead with the good. I want to hear the interesting stuff about you that you never talk about. And then you've got this connection and you've got this wealth of strengths that you can like draw upon while you're talking about like getting past depression or anxiety or whatever else it is. You can remind them, well, you still have this other thing and maybe you can you know, leverage that to help you hear.
Okay. I think people could even use that as a journaling sort of exercise for themselves or, but it sounds like it takes the pressure off of asking the big, hard, deep, like, tell me your deepest, darkest secrets. Like, how did your, you know, tell me about your parents.
Right.
How did they disappoint you?
Right. Exactly.
Which I mean, I think like that might work for some people, but yeah, to get into that, to that inner teenager, get the juices flowing. I love that. How do we, it's like kind of switching gears. How do we talk to teenagers? How do we talk to anyone about grief? I found that grief is one of those conversations that even if I'm doing like career coaching with someone and it slips out like, you know, 20 minutes into the session that like they're, I've had this happen before where it's like they're, I've had this recently with two different clients, someone, a parent had just passed away and someone, their spouse had passed away the previous year. And they're talking to me about their career. And I'm like, what's your relationship to grief? And it's like this sort of like you can, it's almost like you, I could hear the brakes.
Right.
Talk about it.
Oh yeah. I mean, so
how do we enter this conversation with our loved ones?
Well, I think grief is terrifying for a lot of us. And if we can get past our terror and recognize that nobody is an expert in grief, you and I have had similar. So in this past year, I have lost my mother. I've also lost my father-in-law. There's been a lot of grief in my family. And I've noticed as people approach me about it, about my mom, they're super, super cautious. And part of me is like, hey, listen, I don't know what to do any more than you do. So just say what you want to say. Like, you know, if you have a question about like, what this is like, or like, I'm up for engaging in a conversation. So I try to borrow from my own grief. I lost a brother to suicide 22, 23 years ago. I try to borrow from my own experience. And, you know, I think about like, well, what did I want and need during those times? And what I didn't need, and we're all different, right? So I think we can ask people, but what I didn't need was people looking at me like, oh gosh, I'm so, so sorry for your loss. I needed somebody to come up and say like, you know, hey, your mom was awesome. She was really funny. She worked at my school when I was a kid. You know, like tell me a story, relate something to me. And I think sometimes that's what we want, is not necessarily levity and forget the grief. Give me some context for it. Remind me what I'm losing here, because right now all I feel is sad. The other thing is to let people know, like, I'm not great at this, but you can bring it here anyway. And we'll work it through together. You know what I mean? Like, welcome somebody's grief. Yeah. Yeah. And use the word, like you used the word a minute ago, Andrea, and it kind of got stuck in my throat. I was kind of like, oof, that's a tough word. The other thing I actually encourage people to do in TV and movies, you know, death, loss, divorce, a lot of things come up that are riddled with grief, and making kind of judicious use of a pause button and talking about grief, like right then, like, hey, I remember this happened to you. Like, what was this like for you when you went through it? I love that. I like the idea of like, you know, just bringing it up organically when it crosses your mind.
I have been known to be the person who talks about the things that nobody wants to talk about, but I love all that advice. And you're right. I want to underscore something that you said, is that for the most part, I think people want sort of different things, but I can tell you what I believe is across the board. Definitely what people don't want is those sort of packaged things that we hear so much and we see online of the, they're in the better place now.
Oh God. Yeah. No. Right.
Don't say that. Don't start out with at least. No, please don't.
Perfect. Correct. Yes. Agreed.
I definitely heard those too, but yeah, they're in a better place, and like everything that happens for a reason, and like, oof, no, I don't think so.
No. And at least covers so much territory that is just awful for people who are grieving, right? You know, at least you had them for 25 years, right? You know, that kind of thing. It's like, no.
I had someone in my comments on Facebook say that. Yeah, it was somebody I went to high school with who lost his dad when we were in high school.
Oh,
and he gave me that comment, which it's like, of course his feelings are valid, but, and I was in the weeds, like it had just happened, and it was not the right thing to say. Right. It made me so upset. But yeah, grief is one of those things. I think that we run from it because we're faced with our own mortality, faced with our own emotions. It's like, God, it really. it really gets in your face. I have a kind of off the wall question. I don't know if you've ever been asked this in an interview, whether it's a podcast or on TV, but what have you learned about yourself in your decades of being a therapist?
So much. I think that we go into therapy in part to learn about ourselves. So
That's why I got into this industry.
Right. Any session. So I usually hang out in my office for a few minutes at the end of the day and reflect on the day. And I often find myself thinking, what did I learn today? Because sometimes I'll hear, and I work with a lot of really young people, and they'll say something so wise. And I'm like, I have not learned that yet. You know, like I will proclaim balance, for example, in life. Oh, you should balance. Like, work is not everything. And I'll work 12 hours a day. And somebody who is 17 will be sitting across from me and saying, it's good to spend some time listening to music or playing music every day. And I've got a guitar in the corner of the room that is gathering dust. And that day that he brought that up to me, I'm like, I'm going to sit around here and I'm going to play some guitar today. Every day I learn something about myself. And I feel like this work deepens my emotional thinking, but it also, in weird ways, kind of drives my interests and how I live my life. I learned so much from the people. It sounds so cliche, from the people I'm sitting across from, what I watch on Netflix, the music I listen to. Sometimes I'll just get a little bit of advice from somebody, like, the way I feel is reflected in this one song by Billie Eilish. You should listen to this song. And then I find myself like going down the Billie Eilish, you know, rabbit hole. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't think I would have listened to this girl. Now I can't get enough of this music, you know? So I don't know. I think I learned what I'm about and what I'm drawn to and what I'm not through this work.
Oh, great. I love that question. Answer. Thank you. I was just curious.
Yeah.
We're going to take one more quick ad break. When we come back, I want to ask you about anxiety.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Okay, we are back, and the long-awaited topic around anxiety, and I know you mostly work and talk about how it affects teens, but can you tell us, and if you can narrow it down to maybe a few things that are either missing in our lives or that we could add into our lives or change or exercises that are, you know, that would help us get out of it. Or even like, if you want to talk about things that are causing it, like I had Dr. Ellen Vora talking about, there's so many different ways that we're being kind of bombarded that cause our anxiety. What is our take on it?
Well,
what is your take on
it? I'll self-disclose here a little bit. So when I was younger, I was a CPA. In a different lifetime, I would have panic attacks every single day.
Oh my gosh.
Every day, Andrea, like horrible. And my not knowing much about how the brain worked, my medicine for that was caffeine. I would drink a Coca-Cola thinking, this will ease me. Which,
yeah, it was just like your self-care.
Oh yeah, yeah. That, right. So eventually I went to see a therapist, and he wisely just said, you know, like, do you think the anxiety is trying to tell you something? And I realized, like, yeah, I think it's trying to tell me that what I'm spending my life's work doing is not congruent with who I am. And he's like, okay, maybe you should run with that. And within a week, I had quit my job and applied to graduate school. That's kind of the short story. A lot of what my work around anxiety with anybody of any age is there some messaging behind this? Is it telling you something? Because, you know, we can be very quick to, especially today, to jump to like, oh, this is an uncomfortable feeling. I will medicate this away and I will be fine. When in fact, that uncomfortable feeling might be a really important signal from our body to our brain saying, hey, not digging this, would like to try something else. What do you think? You know what I mean? Like, why don't we make some adjustments? And sometimes that's like, let's get on a treadmill, or let's change what we're doing for a living, or let's pick up an instrument or something different. So I think anxiety oftentimes is a message. And sometimes it means just get going. You know what I mean? Like with a lot of young people I'm working with not just young people, people of any age, we became a little dormant during the pandemic. We needed to. And a lot of people are still inert, are not moving. And anxiety just builds up in our still bodies. And if we get moving, we'll find that, oh, okay, this is better. Like this now I feel a little less anxiety. I'm dispersing it through mind, body, and spirit, and I feel a little bit better.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll try to shorten the story. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder when I was 26, 27. And then when I was 45-ish, got an ADHD diagnosis. And psychologist, I get those confused. Sorry. I don't mean to insult your profession.
Not at all. I think we still get
such a similar name. Okay. She said that for many, especially women who are late diagnosed, were often diagnosed with anxiety and because of their unmanaged ADHD, and that it manifested as anxiety, and it was just easier to pinpoint for doctors. And so we get medicated for that. And it was helpful. The medication changed my life at the time, because I, like you, was having just chronic panic attacks. And it was awful, to the point, physical symptoms, throwing up. It was terrible. It was like really affecting my life. But it was, my daughter was, we took her in for some testing, not thinking that she had ADHD. And that's what they said that it was. And I was like, can you please explain this to me? Because this is not what I know it to be. And so she started describing how it shows up in women and girls. And I saw my life flash before my eyes. And I was like, do you mean that that is not a neurotypical brain? So that was the catalyst to have me tested. And what I have found is that my anxiety sort of has two faces, and it's kind of like the same coin, two different sides. Sometimes it's sort of like you described, where if I have too much caffeine, or if my body is trying to tell me something, like there's a conversation that I'm not having, there is something I need to change that's going to be really hard and I don't want to, something I don't want to face, my body will tell me. And the symptom is anxiety. Sometimes I wake up and it's just there. Like, it just is like, hello. And it feels the way I describe it. And there's nothing going on in my life. Like, there's nothing that I can see that needs to change, or maybe it's big picture. I don't know. But, and thankfully, these days are very few and far between. That used to be a lot more. But it's where I describe it as the unwelcome house guest, where on days that it's really bad, I will have to cancel my appointments that day because I just can't manage myself at all. And those days are really hard, and luckily they're few and far between. So that's how I know. I'm like, okay, this is largely how my brain works. I have also noticed that the more I resist that those days, the more I feel angry and resentful for it. And the more I just like, I'm just going to power through and like do all these interviews and take all these clients, the worse it is.
Brilliant.
I just welcome
I'm so glad that you brought that up, Andrea, because I think that's true for a lot of us anxious people is we can wake up or in the middle of the day can strike us. But usually it's like early where it just hits us and it hits us hard. And we realize like, okay, this is just going to be one of those days. And the harder we fight, sometimes the more escalated and elevated that anxiety gets, right? You know, but the more we kind of roll with it, it's kind of like, okay, I am allowed to be gentle with myself. I am allowed to take this day and be easy and gentle and cut way back on scheduling, maybe all the way back. And I'll make up for it another time. And that's okay. And I don't need to analyze
like every
I got a sick day, right? The mental health day. Yeah. I don't have to analyze every element of this. I can just feel this anxiety and move through it. And tomorrow, undoubtedly, I'll feel better. I love that.
For me, it's always gone the next day. I usually have to get like a good night's sleep and I'll do that and it's gone. But like, yeah, my heart definitely goes out to anybody listening who's been in that place of just having like the chronic panic attacks. And it is not a fun ride to be on. So
I don't know a more uncomfortable physical and emotional situation than chronic panic attacks. Really, really awful. Yeah. Not to dismiss anything else, but that's rough.
Well, is there, before we close up, is there anything that you want to add or circle back to, whether it has to do with either of your books, that you want to say in order to feel complete before we tell everyone where to go find you?
The main thing I feel like saying to people in this pseudo post-pandemic area, as you pointed out, is so many people I talk to are so hard on themselves. Like, you know, I'm not doing it right. I didn't do it right. I didn't parent right, or I didn't go to school right, or I didn't do my work right. And the way I look at that is we've all been through wildly unprecedented times and we are all suffering something and we can extend some grace to ourselves. And I think the more we do that, the less symptomatic we're going to be, the less need you need for this couch or somebody's set of pills. If you're kind and gentle to yourself, like you are with so many other people, things work out.
Yeah. I talk about self-compassion a lot here and I think it's the antidote. Like it truly has changed my life and it's so much, I think it's so much more impactful than we think.
Agreed.
We're like, really just like being nice to ourselves and like giving ourselves grace. Like, yeah, it changed my life. Well, where do you want, we'll of course have your website and all of your books in the show notes, but is there anywhere else that you want people to go to find you? Is it your website or somewhere else?
My website's the main place, drjohnduffy.com. Books available on Amazon. On my website, I will make sure that listed on there are the talks and the presentations and the media events I've got coming up.
You're really good about putting all that on your website. We appreciate that. Thank you so much for being here again. And listeners, thank you so much for your time. I am so incredibly grateful for it. I know that you are being pulled in so many different directions. So thank you for being here. And remember, it's our life's journey to make ourselves better humans and our life's responsibility to make the world a better place. Bye for now. Hey, did you know there's free secret podcast episodes waiting for you that are not part of my regular podcast feed? Yes. AndreaOwen.com/free. And you just sign up. You get a link sent to you. It's very secret. It's like a secret club. We don't have a secret handshake. Don't worry about that. But it's these motivating podcast episodes that I made for you. They're under 20 minutes each. There's three of them. They're for wherever you are in your life. So head on over there and grab them. They range from really supporting you and seeing you where you are and being compassionate all the way to giving you a giant kick in your ass and telling you how amazing and gorgeous and phenomenal you are. So AndreaOwen.com/free and get your hands on that free podcast feed.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.